I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. We begin this week with new developments about President Trump and whether he was compromised by Russia during the 2016 presidential campaign. It's a question we now know FBI officials looked into.
We have breaking news at this moment on just how concerned, even freaked out, law enforcement was when President Trump fired FBI Director James Comey.
Here is the headline again. FBI opened inquiry into whether Trump was secretly working on behalf of Russia.
So I'm going to ask you, are you now or have you ever worked for Russia, Mr. President?
Ever since the 2016 presidential campaign, Donald Trump has been dogged by accusations that he and his team were too close to Vladimir Putin and Russia and whether those ties undermine the election. But throughout, the administration has maintained there is and never has been any collusion with Russia.
We've been saying from day one there's been no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion.
There was no collusion, no nothing.
This weekend, the New York Times reported that right after President Trump fired James Comey in 2017, FBI officials began investigating whether he had actually been working on behalf of the Russian government. The president took to Fox News to respond. Here he is talking with Jeanine Pirro on Saturday night.
So I'm going to ask you, are you now or have you ever worked for Russia, Mr. President?
I think it's the most insulting thing I've ever been asked. I think it's the most insulting article I've ever had written. And if you read the article, you'd see that they found absolutely nothing. But the headline of that article, it's called The Failing New York Times for a reason. They've gotten me wrong for 3 years. They've actually gotten me wrong for many years before that.
Here to walk us through the latest reporting from The Times is Nicholas Fandos, a congressional reporter for The New York Times. He was part of the team that worked on Friday's revelations. Nick, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
And Chuck Rosenberg is a former United States attorney, senior FBI official, and DEA chief, and he's also an MSNBC legal analyst. Chuck, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Nick, I want to start with you. What is new in what we're learning about President Trump being under investigation by the FBI?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's one that we struggled to figure out how to explain to readers in this story, because we've known for a while now that associates of President Trump tied to his campaign were under investigation by the FBI for their ties to Russia. And we've known for a while, too, that after President Trump fired Jim Comey as FBI director back in 2017, the FBI opened an obstruction of justice investigation, which was then taken over by Robert Mueller, the special counsel, into whether Trump's action in firing Comey had tried to obstruct that investigation. What our story lays out is that second investigation kind of had two different prongs. And one was a traditional obstruction of justice, and the other was geared around the kind of nature of the investigation. And so the FBI found itself asking a question of if this FBI broader investigation is about finding out what Russia did in the 2016 elections and is a national security concern. You know, is the president working wittingly or unwittingly on behalf of the Russians and obstructing it? So there was a national security component, and they opened, as a result, a counterintelligence investigation into Trump and his, you know, potential ties or relations with the Russians in that decision. So that's the element that's new in this story and helps to kind of tie together what it was that our understanding of what it was that Special Counsel Mueller inherited back in May 2017.
Chuck, based on your experience, how significant are these revelations? Especially, as I mentioned, I think a lot of Americans are, you know, having trouble keeping track. I know I am, of what's important, what isn't. So how significant were these findings?
Well, this may sound incongruous, but it's startling and not surprising at the same time. It's startling if you take a step back and think that a president of the United States is the subject or focus of an FBI counterintelligence investigation. That's remarkable. On the other hand, given all that we've learned and all that we know from public records to date, it would be, I guess, more surprising if the FBI wasn't looking at the president as a possible witting or unwitting target of the Russians. So, startling but not surprising.
Can you help us understand the difference between how the FBI classifies criminal investigations and their counterintelligence inquiries?
Sure. Great question. And it's important to know that investigations are often braided or intertwined, that an investigation for counterintelligence purposes could result in a criminal case. And sometimes, though not often, criminal cases could have counterintelligence overtones. What the FBI is doing is collecting information. When we use information in federal court in a criminal case, we call it evidence. When we use information in the intelligence world, we call it intelligence. But it's really just information. If you think about the Mueller team's indictment of the Russian military GRU intelligence officials, that's a great example of a case that could have gone in either direction. It had counterintelligence overtones. Clearly, the Mueller team was looking at what the Russians had done to interfere in our 2016 elections. But in that case, they also charged a crime. And that's where you can see the braiding, or the fact that those two types of investigations, counterintelligence and criminal, can be intertwined.
And I'm wondering, does the fact that this information was leaked hurt what the FBI is trying to do going forward?
Well, I can tell you, Tanzina, as a former federal prosecutor, I never liked reading about matters we were working on in the newspaper. It never helps. If we had something to make public, we would make it public, and we would do so in federal court. That's where we talk. That's where we speak. In fact, that's the only place that you've heard from Mr. Mueller and his team. And so I think it's a fair bet that they would much prefer that their work remain under the radar until they decide it's time to say something in court.
Nick, there was also the Washington Post reported over the weekend really talking about the president and his one-on-one meetings with Russian President Vladimir Putin. We know that the president has met with Putin before. What's new about what we learned over the weekend? It was not really a surprise that the president has not been as forthcoming with his meetings with Putin, with his staff?
I think the surprising thing was from that report was the lengths that he appears to have gone to keep what happened in those meetings relatively private. President Trump has always had, for Republican or Democrat, I think what Washington would consider an unorthodox view and of Mr. Putin, of American relations with Russia and what ought to happen with those. But what this report said in a pretty startling way was that in at least one instance, the president had gone as far as to try and take back the notes from the interpreter that was with him in the room with President Putin during one of these meetings. That would have been, you know, the official record that would have been relied on.
And was he successful
by other
in doing
career
that?
Officials? He was. I think in that case, the then Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, was also in the room and had given a kind of limited readout of what happened. But, you know, I think we knew this reporting came about and we were reading the story because other officials went to the interpreter and asked for those notes and asked for an account. And that person said what happened. So, you know, the president and the White House had a defense of this, which is that the president's trying to build a relationship. And obviously, they maintain that he hasn't said anything untoward in these meetings. But, you know, we saw over the summer when he met with President Putin privately again in Helsinki and then came out in what was a pretty remarkable and unusual, we can say, press conference for an American president where he seemed to agree with President Putin over American intelligence, with President Putin's conclusions about what had happened in 2016. So I think that there are reasons to be a little bit suspicious of why Trump is so trying to keep these things so close. But there's also reasons, I think, from his point of view, to understand why he would.
Chuck, what's the precedent for this type of behavior, particularly with when an American president meets with someone like Vladimir Putin, with taking these extreme measures to really keep things secret? Is that legal? Should there be some other sort of protocol that presidents have to go through when they meet with people like this?
Well, our president, regardless of party, regardless of person, is our chief diplomat. And so we would want that person to be able to have unfettered conversations, private if they wish, with any other world leader. That makes perfect sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me are all of the steps that this particular president has gone to mirror or parrot the Russian line on so many different topics. And so one conversation off the record or private, no trouble at all. In fact, that's what we would expect our presidents to do. But if you add it up, and prosecutors like to add up evidence, it looks dark. There's no reason, for instance, for the president to have misled Americans on the Trump Tower meeting. There's no reason for him to parrot the Russian line on the reasons for the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979. When you add all these things up, and as I said, prosecutors tend to do that, it begins to look more and more nefarious.
Nick, the president, President Trump, should I say, did respond to your reporting on Saturday night on Fox News. What was your take on that?
So he did on Fox News and sent a series of tweets earlier in the day, which set out this a series of defenses or kind of, you know, what he would call counterpunches that he had offered before, but he strung them together into a narrative in one of the most comprehensive ways we've seen so far that basically gave an alternate explanation. It was riddled with factual errors and unsubstantiated allegations that Hillary Clinton had lied to the FBI, that Jim Comey was corrupt, that Bob Mueller was his best friend and was covering up for him. I think the most interesting thing, though, was when he was asked on Fox News that night, you know, point blank, have you ever, you know, worked on behalf of Russian interests? And, you know, where one would expect a president or, you know, any reasonable person in Mr. Trump's situation to just flatly answer that question, he actually didn't give an answer. He just called the question the most insulting that he'd received. And then he referred back to our article and said it was the most insulting article he'd had written about him. And again, it's just it's another one of these instances where, given the accumulating record that we have now, you know, I think one can't help but wonder, you know, why not answer a simple no to that question? Is it because there is actually something that more there, as the FBI was wondering when he fired Jim Comey? Or is it simply, you know, this is a president whose behavior is erratic and often doesn't serve his own best interests?
Chuck, I'm wondering, I'm sure you heard the interview that we're referring to there with Judge Puro on Fox News and the president. I'm wondering, do you see the president's remarks, which not only included a denial, if you will, or a pushing back on Nick's piece and the Times' piece, but also, you know, questioning whether or not people should be looking into the Michael Cohen's father-in-law's finances? We saw Democrats issue a statement warning President Trump not to obstruct justice by tampering with witnesses. Did the president's remarks on Fox News, were they an obstruction of justice, or could they be construed as such?
I guess they could be construed as such. Nothing in that interview sort of hit me straight over the head as obstructive. But again, you have to look at the accumulation of evidence. In order to prove obstruction, a prosecutor would have to show a corrupt endeavor, a corrupt attempt. And so, is the president merely rambling or venting? Possibly. He does that quite often. Or is he directing remarks for a specific purpose to a specific occurrence in order to try and, you know, turn testimony or warn somebody about giving the truth to the FBI? Possibly. There's nothing in that Fox News interview in and of itself that I would say is obstructive. But again, you have to look at facts as a whole. You have to take them together. What prosecutors often do, Tanzina, is rely on circumstantial evidence. It's probably an apt analogy for today in Washington, D.C. When you wake up and you see snow on the ground, that's circumstantial evidence that it snowed. You may not have watched it. You may not have been awake for it. But when you wake up and see it there, that's circumstantial evidence that it snowed. And circumstantial evidence, a judge will tell a jury, is every bit as compelling, powerful, and lawful as direct evidence. And what we have in this case, and maybe the Fox interview is more of the same, is lots and lots of pieces of circumstantial evidence, comments that the president has made that seem intended to obstruct the investigation.
Chuck Rosenberg is a former U.S. attorney. You can see him on MSNBC. And Nicholas Fandos is with The New York Times. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.